Hello and welcome to the Greenhouse. I'm Pratham Balal.
I'm Anna Snow, and stay tuned for all things planet Earth.
So coming up on our show, we're going to be talking about a new meat option for people. You've heard of plant-based meat before, but have you heard of cell-based meat? Well, stick around because at 1:15, we're going to be talking about what cell-based meat is and why people are saying it's environmentally sustainable. Plus, a new way to heat your home is coming up, a new kind of system that people are really gravitating towards and is becoming really popular is starting to pick up.
And before we get into that, we just want to give a little update on one of our past episodes. We talked about the Willow Project, and it has been decided that it is not being blocked. It is going to be allowed to go through and continue.
Exactly. So what happened is in this Willow Project, we said that environmental groups were going to appeal the building of this pipeline. Basically, a judge yesterday ruled that the environmental groups are not allowed to block the building. So that's what we know for now. It's developing like it came in yesterday. So that's just, you know, an interesting follow-up we wanted to give to our episode.
If we get any more updates while we're still on the air over this semester, you'll get another one.
Absolutely.
But on to talking about heating and cooling your home. That is something that is very important because you want to be comfortable in your home.
Especially now as maybe the summer months are approaching in Phoenix especially. I saw it's going to be 100 sometime this in the next 10 days.
I mean, I walked out of the house this morning. I'm wearing a tank top and shorts, and I was cold. But I wore, like, basically the same outfit but a different shirt, like, yesterday, and was fine. I don't know what is going on with the weather here. But that's not what we're talking about today.
Yes.
That could be an episode, though.
A couple of months ago, we brought you an episode of talking about heat furnaces and gas stoves. That was an interesting one. We really stuck to politics on that one. Now we want to talk about a solution that a lot of people are using that's a little bit environmentally friendly. They're called heat pumps. So the controversy that we're talking about had to do with gas stoves and same thing with heat furnaces. The controversy was that, you know, they spewed a lot of, like,
gas
pollutants.
And coal, you know, you're using fossil fuels that are not renewable, plus they're creating a lot of other pollutants as well. But heat pumps don't really do that.
Exactly. So heat pumps have been really popular over recent times. Their sales have grown around the world about 11%, and they're really popular in Europe for some reason, about 40%. So right now, heat pumps serve about 10% of the United States heating services. So we kind of wanted to understand, like, you know, what are they? Because their name is actually misleading. They both heat up a place you want to heat, but also cool it down. So they're very similar to, like, a temperature control device, air conditioner thing, like, but they also heat up.
Yeah, so basically they move the heat. It is a heat moving system. So it takes heat from a source like a nearby air, or if you're in a cold spot, or there's a geothermal source, and it transfers the heat to where it needs to be. In the past, you know, sometimes bodies of water or heat waste from factories can provide that heat. Basically, if you know how the inner workings and mechanisms of a refrigerator work, it's pretty similar to that.
Exactly. What really makes this interesting is that we were talking about the heat moving system. No new heat needs to be created. And a couple weeks ago, you'll remember we were talking about nuclear energy, and we always said that nuclear energy generates a lot of heat that kind of gets, like, wasted and has to go somewhere. This is a great spot the heat can go to be used in heat pumps. Talking a little bit more about the details now, the heat pump has something called a compressor that moves a refrigerant around. So refrigerant, that's critical to the whole thing. It is responsible for absorbing heat from one source and cooling down another area or period of air. You often see this in air conditioners.
Yes.
The refrigerant basically extracts heat from one source and transfers it to another environment. So that's the heat moving system of all of this. And then once that heat is, I guess, being shifted to wherever it's going, it goes, typically comes out a couple of ways. It can either go overhead through a ventilation system or through underground heating on the floor, which is something that's interesting. I have no idea how effective that would be, but that's something that exists.
And I'm sure a lot of you remember, like, when you were in, you know, elementary or middle school or whenever you were learning about science, and they always said energy can never be destroyed or created.
I remember that.
It can just be kind of changed or moved. So this system is really putting that to use because the heat's already been created, so instead of just letting it be or wasting it, it just moves it, you know? And it also, it doesn't have to create new heat from burning fossil fuels. So that's always a good thing.
Yeah. A word that I kind of used with this is reallocation.
Mm-hmm.
Saves a lot of resources that way. And in addition to like not having to make the environment as worse as fossil fuels,
mm-hmm.
There's also a lot of efficiency.
Yes.
That comes with this. The International Energy Agency says a household heat pump can produce 4 times the heat compared to the heat that electrical energy would generate. So I think a lot of it has to do with a lot of electrical energy that gets generated goes to waste in the transfer process.
Yeah.
But here that's not the case because it's already been created and it's just being used from another spot.
So these are being installed in homes, and they promise to help reduce the strain on electric power systems. And they can be a little more expensive than other forms of heating, but I feel like they're expensive at installation, but probably save you money in the long run on your electric bill and stuff.
Probably, yeah. I've noticed that this happens in a lot of things, and a lot of these cleaner things that they do require a lot more infrastructure to be set up, as we see with like the solar energy.
Yeah, like, you know, my family just finally got using our solar system that we had set up at the house, and it was, I mean, a lot of money up front to install all the solar panels on our roof, but now our house runs on solar energy, so.
And it'll save you money in the long run.
In the long run, exactly, yeah.
And it can, you know, I think runs on renewable energy. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go.
There's a financial benefit, as we see in a lot of renewable places. Just like in solar panel, you get a tax discount. Now, this is actually quite a bit of a discount, up to $2,000 if you buy one in 2023. There used to be a discount before, only $500.
Oh, wow.
So that money has really shot up, and I think that's why you're seeing like a huge popularity boost in heat pumps right now.
Mm-hmm.
I personally, before this episode, I did not know about heat pumps.
I didn't either.
But I saw an article from it on NPR, and I thought, what are these heat pumps? Because they seem to be, you know, getting
pretty
a lot of traction right now.
Definitely.
And then they said like 10% power. So I was shocked. I thought we have to look into this.
10% seems low in the grand scheme of things. But it's actually pretty big for something like we had never even heard of.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's like really powering 10%. Like.
And another like tidbit with this is that just like a lot of technology, it wasn't successful early on.
Mm-hmm.
Like when it got really cold, people said that, you know, this wasn't working very well.
Didn't heat enough.
So they've made advancements now, and I think they're now in like a comfortable stage that it can be used everywhere.
And you want it ideally, obviously, to be used anywhere, but I could see this being something that works well in like a home, like in Arizona. I mean, I can't speak of like Flagstaff and other places, but living in Phoenix, you know, it gets chilly at night in the winter, but not cold like it does in
freezing levels.
Minnesota or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I could see it working better in maybe a little bit more temperate places where there isn't as drastic of changes. Or at least the early ones, I could see them working in places like that, but now it sounds like
there's a
lot more development.
It's also interesting because heat won't be needed as much in Arizona, so you're not spending a lot of money to heat during the summer. So why would you want to invest in a cleaner form of heating that we've already established costs a lot of money, but then you're not going to make up that cost in terms of saving if you're not using it? So I can understand why it may not be popular.
Well, now you get
and this tax credit could help. I wonder if that's enough for people. Is $2,000 enough?
And you said earlier it is called a heat pump, but it can actually cool as well.
It can cool as well.
Because it's just moving the heat. So whether it's moving it into your home to warm you up or out of your home to cool it down, it's just moving it.
Yeah. The person from who I read this from NPR said a heat pump is the wrong name. Because when I thought of a heat pump, I thought, oh, it's like a well and it's like a manual thing.
Yeah.
But it like brings heat only in. It generates it like, you know those trains and you shove coal into their engines and it only does that. I thought it was something like that, but this is much different.
Yes.
Heat pumps are a big competitor to gas furnaces, which is like the traditional form that I think a lot of people use. Gas furnaces obviously use traditional forms of energy generation, like, you know, your fossil fuels, things that are seen as more reliable of energy generation.
If you use a gas furnace, though, you have to pay a gas bill.
Exactly. So you are paying
money. So maybe
money.
It doesn't cost as much up front, or it's already installed in your house, but
you're using a lot of money.
Gas bill.
Yeah. And you use gas in like a lot of places of your house. So hopefully this way is like one way to reduce that gas bill. Gas furnaces do, and this is very interesting, gas furnaces emit a small amount of carbon dioxide, even if they're working perfectly. And that is problematic. And even worse is that it does it in your house. So a lot of that methane and carbon monoxide comes together. And that's why everyone says use a methane direct detector in your home. But so at full capacity, it's not great for you or the environment.
Anyways, heat pumps also seem to have a leg up when it comes to electric furnaces, even though the electric ones are cheap to install and require not so much minimal maintenance, you know. Electric furnaces cost a lot to keep them up and running in their lifespan. That's a lot of money on your electric bill, you know. And, I mean, they do run on renewable energies, but they require the electricity and, you know, lots of different things.
Exactly. Heat pumps take from other sources, so there are more options to kind of use electricity. But, you know, it's not perfect. I think we have to explain it's not perfect. There are negatives. As we mentioned off the top, heat pumps use refrigerants. These are not great for the environment. We call them HFCs, or hydrofluorocarbons. We've used this before. In summary, basically, they are not great for the ozone layer. They create the holes in them. So if they get out, which is likely to happen, it does make things harder for the ozone. But I think it has less pollution compared to
the normal amount of
furnaces. Because when it works correctly, you're using an emission there, but even to generate from the fossil fuel. So it's like two kind of negatives compared to one. So coming up, we got our story of the day.
Yes.
Cell-based meats, how they work, and, you know, are they making good or is it just something else? Stick around. You're listening to The Greenhouse on Blaze Radio and blazeradioonline.com. And welcome back to The Greenhouse. I'm Pratham Dalal.
And I'm Anna Snow. And, you know, like we talked about earlier, everyone's heard of plant-based meats,
yes,
right?
It was a real popular kind of, like, thing that I never tried. Or that was okay.
No, on your mic, it was, like, sliding. Oh. If you tighten the...
Oh, is there a scoop? Perfect.
Yes. Yeah, sorry, I was trying to do it, like, silently.
Oh, I see it. Okay.
On the
yes,
air.
Fantastic.
All right, sorry. Technical difficulties here in the studio, but we're moving on. Anyways, but now there's this newer thing, cell-based meats or cultivated meats.
Yes.
And it's a new method to create meat that could change the way Americans or just people in the world, you know, consume meat and be potentially better for the environment.
And so, see the way the meat production industry is.
Yes.
So here's what it is. Cell-based meat is basically manufactured meat using scientific engineering and molecular biology, all those interesting fields. Here's an official quote of what cell-based meat is. I found that they explained it better. Cell culture technology does not reproduce the animal itself, but produces a product that is intended to resemble traditional meat from an animal, such as steak, minced meat, etc. So it has parts of an animal, but not the whole animal.
It basically, they take cells and grow just the tissue that you would slaughter to get that tissue to be the meat.
Yeah.
But here's a little bit more of the science behind it. Cultivated meat takes cells from animals and puts them together. It debuted in 2013 in hamburger form by an Austrian scientist. And since then, we've seen some research and it has expanded to over 60 countries.
Yes, 60 countries, 60 companies, was what I meant to say. but so it is popular. There's not a lot of research for it yet, as we found out. But a lot of people are kind of trying this because it seems like there's a lot of demand for this in the system. Cultivated meat is pretty beneficial. Without having to kill the animal, you save a lot of pollution. You know, in previous greenhouse episodes, we've talked about how, you know, killing the animal sometimes leads to a lot of, like,
It's just factory farming has to be done on such a large scale that it takes a lot of water consumption. You know, cows naturally produce a lot of methane, and in a normal number, that would be fine. But now there's so many people in the world to feed that there's so many cows, and that's, you know, kind of a problem. Factory farms are also known
disease for spreaders.
Disease spreaders, as well as pesticides.
Yeah.
Pesticides.
Antibiotics
that can pollute
too.
Water and things like that. A lot of these animals that are being, you know, raised this way, they're pumped full of hormones and stuff. That's not good for people. But it's like, well, they want this chicken to have way bigger, you know, breasts so that they can sell the chicken breast. But now all those hormones are going straight into, like, your kids who are eating the chicken nuggets.
Exactly. You know? And this plays a big role in the environment. We just want to give you some statistics. This is from the Humane Society International. They're like a animal rights group. Mm-hmm. They say that of the total global greenhouse gas emissions, killing animals and, like, agriculture for meat is about 16.5% of the global greenhouse gas emissions. So that's, you know, decent chunk. It's also important to note that about 92 billion animals are bred for the purpose of killing in these factory farms. So they're very productive, and there's a lot of them.
Yes. And they use skeletal muscle, fat, and connective tissue from these animals. They can be obtained in a few different ways. The ways that I like to hear about are just blood draw and cheek swabs.
Seems very simple,
seems
no
pretty
harm.
Easy. You also can collect these cells from a recently slaughtered animal or even from an embryo of these animals. According to Nature Food, there is no need for antibiotics in the production of this food.
So you know that your food is, I guess, going to be, you know, free of a lot of things.
Yes, which is good.
Yeah.
The process of actually growing the tissue for the meat and stuff can take about 2 to 8 weeks, depending on which type of meat you're growing, how much you want. That doesn't kind of, I mean, it's 2 to 8 weeks of the actual production of the cells growing into the meat, but there's these things called cell lines that scientists have to develop, and those can take 6 to 18 months before you could even get to the part where you're growing the tissues. That takes 2 to 8 weeks.
From our understanding, it's like the cell lines are like the preparation phase.
Yeah.
And then the execution phase is the 2 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, like you have to have the cells and enough of them and the right kind to produce the meat. So they're called cell lines. I've been reading about it. It's a little over my head. Some of it's a little clinical, a little scientific.
Yeah, very scientific. We're not molecular biologists in any way.
No.
But the big tie that we have back to the greenhouse here is this. We think this is environmentally sustainable because there are some good signs, but there are others that scientists seem to disagree upon, and there's nothing official yet.
On the surface level, takes a lot less land, a lot less water, and it emits a lot fewer greenhouse gases, and it would reduce the amount of agriculture-related, you know, pollution and spread of disease and all that stuff. Cuts down on foodborne illnesses.
Which is very positive.
Yes.
But there's a catch, and we have a quote from Discovery Magazine to kind of explain it better. The environmental impact estimates of cultured meat and is only for unprocessed products.
Mm-hmm.
Further processing would increase their impacts. So from my understanding, it's like the 2 to 8 weeks, and that is like, you know, normal, good levels of not a lot of pollution, not a lot of like energy wasted. But as soon as you get to like other types of meat production, maybe like, you know, your chicken nuggets and stuff like that,
you know,
that's when it gets heavy.
Packaging and treating it and getting it ready to actually be sold to a consumer, I can see how that would add, you know, the processing would. I still don't see, because I feel like you have to do that stuff to regular meat as well. So I don't see it being more so, but I can see that they're saying it's not as.
Well, I was thinking like different types of meat even, but we're still, as we established, we're still a little hazy on this ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think the scientists are too, because they haven't figured it out themselves,
you know,
because they haven't found a sustainable way
yet. They only
yet.
Started this in 2013, and that's 10 years. But in terms of scientific discovery and research, that's a very short amount of time, you know?
Yeah.
This is still very new. It's very young.
But there is potential for it to, like, have less greenhouse gas emissions and be better than the current way, which contributes 16.5%.
Yes.
Now, it's not legal everywhere, unfortunately.
Yep.
Not a lot of people have, you know, endorsed it yet.
Mm-hmm.
One big place, Italy. Italy is banning its factories from making these lab-produced cultivated meat. If these factories are caught, they will be fined up to 60,000 euros. A big reason for this, no one knows, you know, if this is safe, as we were talking about.
I don't fully understand Italy banning it, because I understand not knowing if it's safe. And so you don't want your citizens to have access to that. So I can understand banning the selling of it, but I would think you would want the research to
experiment.
Find out
yeah.
if it's safe. I would, yeah. So
but
I
their factories have banned it.
I understand not selling it, but I do. I would think logically you would want the research to, you know, find out. So Italy banned it, but Singapore gave it its seal of approval and became the first place where it was, you know, sold in a restaurant.
Yeah.
In the form of chicken nuggets.
That was very interesting.
Yes.
What a, you would think that would be an American way. The
yes.
first thing would be chicken nuggets.
It would be chicken nuggets, yeah.
But every other nation is kind of playing like the waiting game, trying to
yeah.
see what happens. They haven't denied it like Italy has, but they also haven't approved it like Singapore has. So it'll be interesting to see this waiting thing. Not a lot of people also want to try this. 84% of people from Italy, but you know, could be representative of the world to some extent, said they would not want to try like a plant-based or a lab-based steak. It's really interesting because, you know, steak is something that's always associated with pride. We're two vegetarians speaking,
yeah.
but like steak is something that's associated with pride. And
it's manly and
yeah.
grill it. It's a real thing, you know?
And so I guess like it, sure, it's cell-based and it's like used from an animal, but I can see why people say like, oh, this is a fake steak.
Yeah.
I
also would be interested to see what other vegetarians and even what vegans would consider this, because it's, you're not
the
animal
hasn't
an animal.
Been killed,
yeah,
but it is an animal product.
Now, to acquire this actual cells, even if the animal is not killed, even if it's a cheek swab or a blood draw, that still came from an animal.
Yeah.
So I would think that vegans would not like it. Vegetarian, though,
it's
I would
up in
think
the air.
It's up in the air, whether because it's technically animal tissue, but it, you know, a lot of vegetarians still do dairy products and eggs, which also come from animals. So
it seems like the way most of this is acquired, it's like the 23andMe
yeah.
of humans is like you just acquired the DNA.
I don't know. I don't even fully know what my opinion would be. Like if these lab grown chicken nuggets were in front of me,
yeah.
would I feel comfortable eating them? I don't even know. I haven't even made that decision for myself yet. As someone who eats the little impossible nuggets that I, you know, buy at Fry's and microwave, I'm like, I'm fine with that, you know?
Yeah. There are some negatives of this plant-based meat or cell-based meat other than it, like, sounds weird and could require some explanation because, I don't know, it seems not gross, but it can be. The way we found out about this story was that kind of as an April Fool's thing, but also like as a serious display in a science museum, people made a meatball out of woolly mammoth DNA. So it has like a start of like gross feeling, but I know it's interesting. But back to the negatives. Even though they may not emit greenhouse gases or cause a lot of pollution, apparently scientists say this cell-based meat uses a lot of energy.
I would understand the labs that these are being grown with requiring a lot of energy. I think that makes sense.
Yeah. But, you know, the positive thing is, at least compared to these plant-based ones, you have the taste of animals, because that's a common complaint I've heard a lot.
Yeah, especially from people who are meat eaters. Now, I've been vegetarian since I was 10 years old, and I'm 21 years old now. So, to me, I do eat, you know, a lot of the fake stuff. A lot of because it's microwave and it's
yeah.
convenient and it's easy. And I don't really necessarily miss it. Like, I actually am very suspicious of meats, of fake meats
yeah.
that taste like the Impossible Burger. I'm a little scared of it. It's
exactly.
a little suspicious.
And I think, and you're not the only one.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know. We're very young into this. It's not, you can't buy it anywhere. Like, if this motivated you to try it, you can't. Sorry.
Sorry. Unless you go to Singapore to that one restaurant.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to try, and it'll be interesting to track. Thanks for joining us on The Greenhouse today. We talked all about, you know, heat pumps and ways that they're kind of emerging into the market and a new tax credit you could get if you would like to attempt to see how it works.
Heat pump sales will probably grow now because of us.
Because of us. And we also talked about, you know, cell-based meats and, you know, are they worthy of trying? How are they made? And could they be beneficial? Because we don't even know if it's environmentally sustainable.
That's true.
But it looks like it.
Yeah. All right. Thanks so much for joining us on The Greenhouse. I'm Anna Snow.
And I'm Pratham Vall. Tune in next week for all things planet Earth. Have a great day. Bye.